end of the day, they went for a prisoner swap. Now Hezbollah is making sure that to once more show that that area is the front of confrontations and where Hezbollah will continue to be present. And just to point that out, Khalid Wadi is an area that lies between the towns of Ramya and Ayt al-Shaab. And this is why it is significant, because you have a lot of, you may say the owners, it is the hometown or the home area of for several people, and two villages united. Right. That makes it, of course, easier for the people of that those hometowns to defend it with everything they've got.
More Palestinians are falling victim to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza as the regime's air and artillery strikes continue to pound the blockaded territory. In one of the latest attacks, at least five people were killed and several others wounded after a Palestinian home was bombed in northern Gaza. Elsewhere in the Annas neighborhood, a dozen Palestinians were slaughtered in the Israeli shelling of their home. The regime's shelling also left a number of Palestinians dead northwest of Gaza City. Two other Palestinians were killed in Israeli shelling in the central town of Az-Zawaida. The regime's forces maintained complete siege of the Jabalia refugee camp for the 12th consecutive day, depriving about 200,000 citizens of food, water and medicine. The Israeli aggression against Gaza has claimed the lives of over 42,400 Palestinians so far, leaving more than 99,100 others injured. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musaba joined us earlier with further details on the latest Israeli strikes across the besieged territory. Let's take a listen.
Yes, actually, the Israeli occupation forces have ramped up their attacks against the essential buildings in all districts of Gaza Strip. Let me begin with the fish massacre that took place over the past couple of hours in Gaza City, whereas the Israeli occupation forces destroyed a house over the heads of its residents, killing at least 8 Palestinian civilians and injuring scores of the Palestinian people in As-Sana'a Strait in the vicinity of the Jordanian hospital in that area. Needless to mention that another house was hit in Al-Nasr neighborhood in the northern part of Gaza City. Meanwhile, another house was hit in Rafah City over the past couple of hours, particularly in Khirbet al-Adas area, which is located in the northern part of the city. Needless to mention that this is the third consecutive house to be targeted by the Israeli occupation forces in less than 3 hours. So this reveals clearly that the Israeli occupation forces are still attacking more Palestinian residential buildings, and many of those Palestinian residential buildings are unfortunately populated.
The Israeli occupation forces have temporarily detained a group of Palestinian olive pickers in the occupied West Bank. The new development came after reports about the regime's forces and settlers harassing Palestinian farmers as the olive harvest season arrives. According to local sources, Israeli forces detained Palestinian olive pickers near Nablus while they were attending their lands and scattered their crop in the air before releasing them. This after a group of UN experts warned that Palestinian farmers in the occupied West Bank are facing the most dangerous olive harvest season ever. They warned that the Israeli actions undermine both food sovereignty and the self-determination of Palestinian families. They noted that Israeli authorities have increasingly revoked or refused to issue prior coordination permits, which are essential for farmers to access their lands. The experts highlighted the crucial role of the olive harvest for Palestinian livelihoods and called on Israeli forces to refrain from interfering with this year's harvest. Earlier, we talked to our West Bank correspondent Nakar Hamad to get more details on Israeli attacks on Palestinian farmers.
The olive season is a main lifeline over here for Palestinian farmers, and they have been waiting for that season from 1 year to another. Since the past year, the farmers have been abandoned from entering their fields, not to mention to harvest their fields and to work with the olive trees. That is considered to be not only an economic source of living, but also a rooted cultural and a very important symbol over here for the Palestinian farmers. many attacks on the Palestinian farmers happened today, not to mention what has happened yesterday and the day before that, and the day before that. Systematic attacks on the farmers as the Israeli regime and the settlers are marking a headline that the land and the water sources over here are the main battle over here in the West Bank. Also, not only in one place, we are talking about more than 10 places where reportedly to be attacked by the Israeli settlers backed by the IOF over here in the West Bank.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has strongly condemned Israel's repeated attacks on medical centers in Gaza and other countries. It says the measure is a turning point in the dark history of the occupying entity and a scandal for its supporters. Issuing a statement, the IRGC said Israel has repeatedly attacked hospitals and medical teams in Gaza and Lebanon over the past year. It highlighted the latest Israeli attack on a field hospital run by the Iranian Red Crescent Society on the Syrian-Lebanese border. The IRGC said Israel's Western supporters, topped by the US, encourage the regime to commit more brutal massacres in Gaza and Lebanon by supplying it with deadly weapons. It asserted that Israel's supporters must be tried as accomplices in the regime's crimes. The IRGC also called on all Muslim nations to stand up against Israel and use every means necessary to end the relentless oppression of Palestinians. Investigative journalist Tony Gosling joined us earlier with his take on how the world should react to Israeli strikes on hospitals and medical facilities. Here's what he had to say.
Well, look, never mind calling on all nations. He needs to be calling all nations and Christian and Jews around the world, because actually the fact of the matter is this is common cause between us, as well as anybody. It doesn't matter what religion or faith. This is a genocide, and it's particularly becoming obvious that the words spoken even by people like President Macron, which have been quite encouraging for the Palestinians, they don't really seem to ever lead to action. So it was interesting. One of the articles by a former Guardian journalist, it's a shame he's not still at the Guardian, Jonathan Cook, explains that in conversations, confidential conversations, with the ambassadors from the West to Israel, it's quite clear when asked that there are no red lines. They have to scratch their head. Well, there is no really any red lines at all between many of these Western countries, particularly Britain and the United States, and Israel. So it seems they can get away with almost anything.
Iran's foreign minister has condemned a joint statement by the European Union and the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council on three Iranian islands in the Persian Gulf. Abbas Araghchi said the statement shows that the EU is responding to Iran's path of respectful cooperation with desire for confrontation. He stressed that the three Iranian islands of Greater Tumb, Lesser Tumb and Abu Musa have always belonged to Iran and will forever remain as such. Araghchi said the era of European malign divide and rule interference in the region is long over. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman also reacted to the statement. Ismail Baghaei said the statement shows EU's disrespect for the UN Charter and the principle of respect for the national sovereignty of all countries. Baghaei urged the EU to avoid interfering in the region's affairs. He said the GCC states should have used their joint meeting to hold EU members accountable for supporting the Israeli genocide in Gaza instead of making erroneous territorial claims against a neighboring country. Palestinian resistance factions and national forces have gathered in Damascus to address the latest developments in the occupied Palestine and Lebanon and discuss the possible means to support the resistance. Our correspondent Ibrahim Wahdi reports from Damascus.
At the headquarters of the Palestinian National Council in Damascus, an exceptional meeting of Palestinian resistance leaders was held. General secretaries and faction leaders gathered to discuss the worsening situation in Palestine and Lebanon. as well as the Israeli occupation's brutal massacres in the Gaza Strip and the need for immediate coordinated action.
Netanyahu has announced that he is currently working to establish a new Middle East through the killing and displacement of our people in Gaza. They claim that they are targeting fighters while killing civilians. They are also attacking Lebanon, which supported our oppressed people and gave the ultimate sacrifice, martyr Said Hassan Nasrallah.
The leaders issued a strong statement demanding the restoration of Palestinian national unity and the adoption of a unified strategy based on all forms of resistance, including armed struggle. They called for an end to security coordination with Israel and urged all Palestinian people to stand firm against all attempts to undermine their cause.
We affirm that the brutal Israeli attack on our people in the Gaza Strip, especially Jabalia, will not succeed. The Palestinian resistance will defend its people with all its might. We call on the international community to stop the crimes of this occupation, and we say to the Israeli occupation, as Sheikh Naim Qassem said, we will drag this rabid dog by its leash.
In this statement, the leaders urged governments around the world to cut ties with the Israeli occupation and prosecute its criminal regime for war crimes. They denounced Western government stance against Palestinian civilians and called on the international community to uphold human rights and end double standards.
The Israeli enemy's massacres would not have continued without American support. It is also unfortunate that the enemy burned our people alive in Jabalia camp due to the silence of the international community. For example, the German foreign minister clearly stated that she supports the bombing of Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip. What is this Nazi-like criminal aggression?
The leaders praised Hezbollah's recent operations targeting Israeli military positions in northern Palestine and the successful Iranian retaliatory operation True Promise 2, highlighting the importance of unity among resistance forces. Today's meeting is part of the joint Palestinian coordination to face challenges and take measures in support of Palestinians as well as the Lebanese resistance against the Israeli aggression. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
As the world witnesses the genocide of the Palestinian and Lebanese people by the Israeli regime, indigenous tribes in the United States reflect on their own history. They remember the genocide inflicted by Euro-American colonizers who stole their land. Indigenous People's Day serves as a poignant reminder. Rachel Hamdoun reports from New York.
That is an hour.
Every year on the second Monday of October, there are two types of people in America. Those who commemorate Indigenous Peoples Day when natives were slaughtered by colonizers, and those who celebrate this genocide by calling it Columbus Day, marking the founding of the nation. In New York, Indigenous people gathered to honor Indigenous culture and heritage, which were suppressed by the colonizers. In Utah, home to thriving tribes, we spoke with an Indigenous activist fighting for the liberation of Palestine.
Because the Palestinian people, like Indigenous people, for the at least the past 75 years have been actively resisting the settler colonial project in the form of Zionism in historic Palestine. Here in the United States, Native people have been fighting against that sort of force, well, all of their existence since the colonial period.
Presidential candidate and activist Claudia de la Cruz was also present to speak to us on the idea of resistance and the upcoming elections.
We are demanding the end to the illegal occupation of Palestine. Because that's an illegal occupation that is recognized internationally. The problem is that the United States as an empire does not respect or abide any international law. In our presidential campaign, what we are attempting to do is precisely that. Bring people to the attention that it doesn't matter whether it's Trump or Harris. It's not about the individual. It's about the political and economic project that they're there to protect. And I think we need to gain that understanding of politics. Malcolm X called it political maturity. We need to gain the political maturity to understand our position as working class people and the position of the ruling class and what they're there to do. They're not there to represent us. They're not there to represent our interests. They're not there to protect us. They're there to protect U.S. empire, the billionaires, the corporations, and the banks, and the military contractors.
The colonial roots and imperialist strategies rooted in the U.S. government and its foreign policies continue to branch out and take as many lives as it can. From Indigenous America in 1492 to Palestine, Lebanon, and Yemen in 2024. Rachel Hamdoun, reporting from Utah.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Behind the scenes, U.S. Democratic strategists are increasingly alarmed by the numbers. The party's Senate candidate in Michigan, Elisa Slotkin, warned recently that presidential candidate Kamala Harris was not polling as well as expected. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Washington Post has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump's supporters do not pitch up at his rallies expecting to hear policy speeches or even the truth. Mostly they go for the comfort of distractions from hard realities and the allure of false promises to revive the past. But some of the loudest cheers at Donald Trump's recent rally in Saginaw, Michigan, came in response to a claim the former U.S. president's supporters could believe when he said election polls were swinging his way in the battleground state and that Kamala Harris's honeymoon period was now over. Trump said, "We're up in all of the polls. We're up in every swing state. They had a honeymoon period." With just 3 weeks left until Election Day on 5th of November, Democrats fear that Trump is right. Some complain that Kamala Harris has squandered an initial burst of enthusiasm after Joe Biden dropped out of the race in July, which sparked a surge in fundraising and volunteering for her campaign. Michigan is one of a handful of key swing states that will decide the result of this most momentous of elections. While Kamala Harris has a slight lead in national polls, she's struggling in Michigan, a state she must win or face a more challenging path through the U.S.'s Electoral College to take the White House. Donald Trump won the state by just 10,704 votes in 2016 and lost it by a narrow margin to Joe Biden 4 years later. The stakes are enormous. Trump has campaigned in 2024 on an ever more extreme platform, threatening mass deportations of immigrants and promising to seek revenge on his political enemies if he returns to the White House. Recently, Trump even demanded one of America's big television networks lose its license because he sees its political coverage as unfair to him. In a country that prides itself on the so-called free speech, freedom of the press could ail quickly under a second Trump term. For many, U.S. democracy itself feels threatened. The Harris campaign has long considered its easiest path to victory is by winning the Rust Belt battleground states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. If the vice president were to lose in Michigan, she would almost certainly need to win one of the other closely contested states of Georgia, Arizona, or North Carolina. A Quinnipiac University poll released last Wednesday, 9th of October, put the vice president 3 points behind Donald Trump in Michigan, while poll trackers offer a mixed picture. For those desperate to know which way Michigan might go, it is Saginaw that is the bellwether county of the state. Barack Obama won it twice before Trump beat Hillary Clinton in the county by a little more than 1,000 votes, just over 1% of the ballot, in 2016. 4 years later, Joe Biden took Saginaw County from Donald Trump by an even narrower margin of just 303 votes. Both campaigns are piling resources into Michigan, including a deluge of frantic television advertising and a merry-go-round of candidates and prominent supporters wheeling through the state. Kamala Harris's running mate, Tim Walz, was in Detroit, Michigan on Friday, 11th of October, looking to win over blue-collar union workers. The vice president is expected in Detroit in coming days in a bid to turn out black voters who are key to a Democratic victory in Michigan. The Harris campaign has wheeled out Barack Obama in recent days and sent Bernie Sanders, the darling of the left of the Democratic Party, to rally student support in Saginaw a week ago. Meanwhile, Donald Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance traversed Michigan, promising to bring back the old and attacking the new. Senator J.D. Vance joked to an audience in Detroit on Tuesday, 8th of October, about the importance of the state. "I'm going to be in Michigan like 30 times before the election." The pair have repeatedly pledged to make the American car industry great again after so many jobs were lost to globalization and automation, while attacking its future by scorning electric vehicles. Donald Trump's rally in Saginaw leaned heavily on promises to bring back the dozen or so auto factories in the county that have closed in recent years. Alongside the fantasy promises in a darker campaign aimed at those who do not fit the view of what many Trump supporters think an America should look like, some of it is dressed up as opposition to illegal immigration, but groups supporting Trump are running television advertisements with sinister overtones in Michigan, including one paid for by Duty to America that shows a series of photographs of white people who are said to have been left behind. It said, "Even if we do everything right, Harris and the Democrats find new ways to make us pay. For what? No matter what we do, Democrats are against us. So this November, we're against them." British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. Across the key Rust Belt states, U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump has a clear lead on two of the most important issues for many voters: the economy and immigration. According to a Quinnipiac University poll, he's even ahead by 1 percentage point on which candidate would better preserve the so-called American democracy, despite his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Behind the scenes, Democratic strategists are increasingly alarmed by the numbers. The party's U.S. Senate candidate in Michigan, Elisa Slotkin, warned recently that Kamala Harris was not polling as well as expected. She told a fundraiser, "I'm not feeling my best right now about where we are on Kamala Harris in a place like Michigan." She added, "We have her underwater in our polling." Some Democratic campaigners blame the campaign. Carly Hammond is an organizer for the U.S.'s largest trade union confederation, the AFL-CIO, for the Saginaw region, which is running the city council while also canvassing for Kamala Harris. She said, "This is the most expensive election in American political history. There's more money around, more advertisements, more signs, the volunteers are there. I really haven't seen anything like this in terms of the mobilization efforts." She added, "What is missing is Kamala Harris's policies. People ask, what is she going to do? I've heard about 200 Harris advertisements in the past few weeks, just because they're inescapable. But I couldn't tell you what her concrete plan is to tackle anything." Some of the Democratic messaging in Michigan plays to Donald Trump's agenda, with repeated promises to secure the border, even though Saginaw is 1,500 miles away from the Mexican frontier, and undocumented immigrants make up only 1% of the state's population. But it does not appear to be doing Kamala Harris much good whilst alienating some Democrats. Hammond said she feared that Kamala Harris had retreated into defensive messaging and a reliance on scaring voters over Trump's ties to Project 2025, the authoritarian plan to impose right-wing control across the entire U.S. government that is costing her momentum.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady. You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRAB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. Well, I'm so happy to be here. Actually, I'm Asma, and it's very much amazing to be here with Sister Zainab again. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Walaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
And thank you very much for being here. Introduce yourself very much briefly for those who have just joined us and they do not know about you.
All right. Well, this is Surfatul and Zainab Askari. I'm from Kashmir. That's under the administration of India. And I have been living in Iran for some 9 years now. And I have been studying Hausa for the last 8 years. During this Hausa time, I have had extensive research in the field of, I would say, family, the strengthening of family, writing a book over women, women in the perspective of Islam.
So thank you for being here, sister. Generally speaking, it would be impossible to think one of them, I mean, male or female, to be wiped out from the world. But there is this new thing that people do, which is the thought experience. In this thought experience, we might think of a world in which no man exists. How would it be? I mean, how would it look like, the world without men?
Okay.
Would it be a better world or no?
As you rightly put it, thought experiment, it could not be realized in reality. So imagining a world without men, first of all, it prompts so many considerations for us, like across without social, cultural, or biological dimensions. See, for example, in terms of biological area, the human reproduction, it would be, it would face significant challenges. Although we have so many technologies today, but a complete absence of men could lead to concerns over like genetic diversity. First mm-hmm. of all, we have diversity because of men. So no doubt, like we have the current technologies, like such as IVF, artificial insemination, and other things for sustaining the population. But in this sliver of time, when medicine has made all things like seem achievable through advancement and overreach, and like things like artificial intelligence even wields its threats behind the possibility and productivity. Remember one thing, that humans are natural.
Yeah.
Native members of the Earth's ecosystem, and we cannot be replaced. Mm-hmm. So preservation and health of women is essential to the health of soil, to the health of Earth, the environment, the nature, and the creation itself. Men actually play many important roles, like in families as fathers. Can you imagine a family without a father? Can you imagine a family without brothers, sons? So their presence is actually important, vital. It provides us support. It provides us protection. They provide us guidance. They're really, really important for the upbringing mm-hmm. of children and the stability of the families.
Yeah. Well, they are important just as women are. But then what if we said that it was a thought experiment and we were just, going through a fictional experience.
Right.
And then don't you think that all these wars in the world, all these problems, you know, because I have read some, if you go and have a surfing in the net, or if you go and read some of the comments out there, then you would see that there are many people out there who are saying that the cause of all the problems in this world, specifically the wars and miseries that are inflicted upon the world,
Because of men.
Yeah, because of men.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go actually deeper into this very discussion, but then let's go for a short break and then we'll come back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
A world without men could not be possible, just the way that a world without women could not be possible. I have always had this in my mind that because many people used to think that, okay, used to bring up this discussion of a world without women, because the other side, the people from Mars would think that the world would be a better place if there were no women from Venus. But then they used to think that if there were no women, there's no emotion, there's no colorful imagination in this world, and there'd be no creativity, actually. It would be all mechanical, it would be all like robots. The men alone would have nothing to enjoy. But
right.
Then, when there are women, everything would turn out to be so colorful, everything is so creative, they would add to the taste of life, and all of the beautiful words you can attribute to women. But then, since we're in Muslim Lady, as for today, we're talking about a world without men. Well, we know that it's impossible because both genders are needed in this active world of creation. Many people think that if there were no men, there was no war in this world.
Right.
If there were no men, there would have been no misery and problems in this world.
And there would have been other things. There would have been the other sides as well. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, women are good at mental wars.
Yes.
They are good at destruction and apparently, but they are mm-hmm. very good at mental wars and they could
yeah.
destruct things mentally much.
So you think that if we were the ones who were responsible for this world, we were in the position of ruling, wouldn't it be pretty much easier, like the situation in this world?
Well, it apparently seems so, but see, every gender has its specific role. Like, for example, we talked on the family real bonds right now. So we said that these family roles, they contribute to the actually the social fabric and also the community stability. So again, thinking of men, a world without men, the societies might experience a shift in, like, say, for example, leadership. Right?
Exactly.
Or say, for example, the lifestyles or the conflict resolution strategies, mm-hmm. because for men, there are different strategies and women may apply different strategies to resolve a conflict. There would be predominantly female in the workforce that would lead to changes in the workplace culture, that would lead to the practices and policies that are female-centric. Industries may shift their focus, that are all driven by, the values and priorities of a female-centric workforce, okay?
Yeah.
We're coming to innovation and creativity, mm-hmm. again, in various fields like art.
So far, everything is going so well with that.
Right. So, yeah, like in the fields of art, science, and technology, and like much more, they will be influenced. But, hey, again, historically mm-hmm. and, you know, contemporarily, men have been key figures in various fields like that. You can't deny they have given a lot to the field of science, to the field of technology, to the field of art, philosophy, and governance. So, their innovations and ideas have shaped societies and also cultures. Acknowledging their contribution does not diminish the roles played by women.
Of course.
So,
sure.
Yeah, but rather it illustrates what we are here to illustrate about is that how the diverse human talents and perspectives enhance the world.
Mm-hmm. So, back to that experiment, we imagined a world without men. What happened was that everything was going so well, and then suddenly you brought up the influence men have had in this life that already we're having and we see. But then there might be some women out there, some Muslim ladies, who would say that, okay, if there were actually no man, then I would have been the pilot. I would have been the one who invented this or that. I would have been the key figure in creating this or that blessing in the life of human beings.
Right.
If there were no men, would we just be able to think about their role in our lives? I mean, like, imagine you have never known a concept called men.
Right.
So I would have never known what they would look like or what their role would have been in my life.
Again, I'm a Muslim lady and I know that Allah is Hakim.
Yeah,
he is the all-wise.
Sure.
So every human being has a purpose. Both men and women have unique contributions and roles in this society, and each has intrinsic value. You cannot take out one. It's like, you know, when we say Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the all-wise, he's the Hakim, this belief that everything has a purpose and that all creations serve a greater plan, mm-hmm. It includes both men and women. You cannot take out any one of them. So men do have their collection of, I know, beneficial and damaging contributions to history.
Of course.
But like women, they are necessary.
So let this be the highlight of this part of today's episode, that both men and women are needed in this life. To have a balance, we have to have both of them. Men and women both are needed in this life, in this world. Both have got their contribution to human life. So if there is no woman, there would be no mother. If there is no woman, there would be no feeling and emotion. There would be no mercy in this world. And if there were no men, there would have been no, perhaps, security. Or perhaps there would have been no supportive feeling that would come from their behavior towards the other inhabitants of the world. That's one of the, actually, one of the factors that would show the wisdom of God. And this is very important for us to have it in our mind, that in this life, everything is in balance. Men and women are there to create a balance and moderation. And then it's all yours to tell us the last points about today's episode.
Yeah, so like to conclude it, we can say that men and women, biologically, emotionally, sexually, spiritually, they complete a self-evident cycle of existence.
Exactly.
So men and women are viewed as complementary. Each has unique strengths and qualities that together contribute to the well-being and functioning of a society. Mm-hmm. So, you know, men often take on the roles that involve physical strength, leadership sometimes, and certain social responsibilities, while women have their own roles. They possess nurturing qualities. They possess emotional intelligence, maybe that men lack, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and they have caregiving roles. So both are essential. We cannot take anyone out from the society. Both are essential for a balanced and a harmonious society. There are, unfortunately, these wicked systems in place. In societal, at societal level, technological and governmental level, they are designed knowingly or unknowingly to emasculate our boys, cripple our adolescents, and crush our men.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, we may survive wars, we may survive environmental disasters, and all manners of evil, but we will not survive a world without men. Acknowledging the importance of men is an acknowledgement of the diversity of Allah's creation.
Yeah.
You know, each person, regardless of his gender, is created with purpose and potential that, again, reflects what the wisdom of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Exactly. I would put it this way, that there is no one in this world who would say that living without a father is a happy thing, because those who have it, only those would be able to say what it means to have a father who's caring, who's so protective, and who's there forever whenever you need someone to be your support and help. So I would just put it this way, that we all need fathers at the same time that we care too much for our mothers. And this is it, I guess. In this world, in this modern world, there might be some women who are doing so perfectly well without men on their side, but even them themselves, even if they did not express it or confess it, but I guess even if they don't have a husband, for sure they might have the support of a father, a brother, someone on their side who's been always there for them and helping them with that feeling of a man that we all know what it means. So thank you, Sister Zainab, and thank you, dear listeners. It was so interesting. And until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. But this waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the Limelight.
The Zionist regime is tightening its spies on civilians in both Gaza and in Lebanon, issuing new evacuation orders in both places. However, Lebanon's anti-terrorism movement, Hezbollah, is displaying stiff resistance in the face of Zionist terrorism, and for the past several days is showering Haifa and other places in the northern parts of the occupied Palestinian territories by steadily raining down missiles. The result has been blunting of Israeli bid to invade Lebanon. The enemy has at last realized that the axis of resistance is fully intentioned to speed up the collapse of the Israeli regime. In this regard, we take a look at the world media websites and news agencies. Please stay tuned for the second part of this article. The Electronic Intifada has covered this story and tells us more. The Zionist regime continues to attack schools and other facilities being used as shelter by displaced Palestinians throughout Gaza. At least 28 people were killed and more than 50 were injured in an Israeli attack on a school being used as a shelter in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza recently. While the Israeli regime has claimed to have targeted the Hamas command and control center, as it has claimed without evidence in countless other attacks on shelters for civilians its military has displaced, witnesses told the media that there were two airstrikes and hit two rooms in the school where food aid was being distributed. Many mothers and children queuing up to receive food were killed and injured in this Israeli attack, according to Adil Khodr, a regional director for the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF. Adil Khodr said, two health workers belonging to a UNICEF partner organization were among those killed. Aid entering Gaza is at the lowest level in months, the United Nations Monitoring Office, OCHA, warned. People have run out of ways to cope, food systems have collapsed, and the risk of famine persists, according to the United Nations office. Meanwhile, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported that far-right and virulently anti-Palestinian ministers allied to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu are moving for the Israeli military to take responsibility for every stage of the aid distribution process in Gaza, purchasing the aid, transporting it, securing it, and distributing it among Gaza's population. Meanwhile, in Lebanon, an Israeli air raid on a densely populated residential area in central Beirut killed at least 22 people recently, marking the third significant attack on the city of Beirut and the city centre since 23rd of September. Among the dead was a family of eight, including three children, who have evacuated from the south of the country, according to a Reuters news agency report citing an unnamed security source. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, said in a situation report published recently that among the 2,110 people killed in Lebanon since October of 2023 through to 8th of October 2024, 127 were children, with around 70% of casualties occurring over the past 3 weeks. There have been more than 9,400 strikes in Lebanon over the past year, according to United Nations figures. The new school year has been postponed in Lebanon as more than half of all schools in the country are being used as shelters for displaced population. Around 40% of the 1.5 million children registered in Lebanon schools are currently displaced. Around 1.2 million people, or one-fifth of the country's population, have been internally displaced within Lebanon, according to the Save the Children. Recently, the Israeli regime military ordered the evacuation of 23 villages in southern Lebanon, instructing residents to move northwards of north of the Awali River. Between 23rd of September and 9th of October this year, more than 310,000 Syrians and nearly 110,000 Lebanese citizens fled Lebanon to neighboring Syria. The United Nations Office, OCHA, stated recently Israeli airstrikes have not only intensified but also expanded into previously unaffected areas and increasingly target critical civilian infrastructure. At least 12 facilities in Lebanon run by UNRWA, the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, are being used as shelters, and three Palestinian refugee camps have been affected by the airstrikes, according to UNICEF. UNICEF added that around 24,500 Palestinians have fled refugee camps because of the recent Israeli attacks. Meanwhile, 12 hospitals in the country have reportedly been damaged, and around one-third of all primary healthcare facilities in Lebanon have closed. More than 100 health workers and emergency personnel have been killed in Lebanon over the past year, according to the United Nations Human Rights Office. According to the UN Office, OCHA, hospitals in southern Lebanon are shutting down because of damage sustained in attacks and supply shortages, with at least three suspending operations entirely. According to Ghassan Abu Sitter, a British-Palestinian surgeon who worked in Gaza during the first weeks of the genocide and is currently in Lebanon, Ghassan Abu Sitter said, "We're witnessing a similar pattern to what was happening in Gaza, in that the Lebanese healthcare system is being targeted systematically." However, Lebanon's anti-terrorist movement Hezbollah is displaying stiff resistance in the face of Zionist terrorism, and for the past several days is showering Haifa and other areas of the occupied Palestinian territories raining down missiles. The result has been blunting of Israeli bid to invade Lebanon. The enemy has now realized that the axis of resistance is fully intentioned to speed up the collapse of the Israeli regime. A new report by an independent United Nations Commission of Inquiry found on its investigation of attacks of four hospitals in Gaza that the Israeli military attacked these facilities in a similar manner, suggesting the existence of operational plans and procedures for attacking healthcare facilities. The United Nations Commission added, "Attacks on healthcare facilities are an intrinsic element of Israel's broader assault on Palestinians in Gaza, and the physical and demographic infrastructure of Gaza, as well as of efforts to expand the occupation. Attacks against healthcare facilities, directly resulting in the killing of civilians, including people receiving medical treatment or seeking shelter, constitute a violation of the Palestinians' right to life, according to the United Nations Commission. Such acts constitute the crime of extermination of humanity," the Commission added. The Commission also said attacks on medical facilities providing pediatric and neonatal care have led to incalculable suffering of children and patients, including newborn babies. The United Nations Commission added, "Israel has violated children's right to life, denied children access to basic health care, and deliberately inflicted conditions of life, resulting in the destruction of generations of Palestinian children and potentially the Palestinian people as a group."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Half a dozen Israeli forces are killed in new attacks by Hezbollah as a group pounds the regime's military sites and settlements with rockets. Israel's unrelenting airstrikes and artillery fire claim more civilian lives in Gaza, raising the genocidal war's death toll to over 42,400. Iran strongly condemns a joint statement by the EU and GCC members, stressing that the three Persian Gulf islands will forever belong to the country. The Hezbollah resistance movement continues to carry out retaliatory operations against Israel in response to the regime's aggression against Lebanon. In one of the latest operations, Hezbollah fighters bombed settlements of Carmel and Kiryat Shemona with large rocket barrages. Hezbollah also targeted a gathering of Israeli soldiers on Al-Kaba Hill in Markaba with artillery shells. The group carried out a similar strike in Misgav Am while inflicting heavy losses on Israeli troops near Al-Khorza town. A gathering of Israeli soldiers between the towns of Odaisa and Makaba was also targeted with rockets. Hezbollah fired rockets at the Israeli town of Safed for the third time in 24 hours. Hezbollah fighters also destroyed two Israeli Merkava tanks in early Thursday attacks using guided missiles. The group's fighters are also putting up stiff resistance against invading Israeli troopers in South Lebanon. According to Israeli sources, at least seven soldiers were killed and over a dozen others injured in clashes with Hezbollah fighters. Our Beirut correspondent Maryam Saleh joined us earlier with the latest updates on Hezbollah's retaliatory operations against Israeli targets. Let's take a listen.
Khaled Wadi is a very, very symbolic place. It's very important because that was the area where Hezbollah was able to capture two Israeli soldiers in 2006. And their main objective behind that capturing of these two soldiers was to go for a prisoner swap. Since then, there were still several Lebanese who were held in Israeli jails in the Israeli regime. So that was their attempt. But of course, the Israelis launched a full-scale war for 33 days, which led to no realizing their objectives. And then at the end of the day, they went for a prisoner swap. Now Hezbollah is making